Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. This is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you take it, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. Kelly, off for one more day, still enjoying the holidays in Florida. Not your typical football Friday later on the show. Steve Fezzik cannot be here this morning. He is busy policing Twitter, I believe, is the reason given. Dr. Bob is out pioneering, so he cannot be on the show as well. But we will have Chris Felica in the house for hour number two. And Carl Sack in studio. Carl Sack, who was with us by phone earlier in the week to talk NBA and NFL. He'll be here in studio. He's in Vegas. He from KillerCappers.com, so we look forward to that. Also, Paul Carr on the Premier League. Jason Weingarten this morning. A whole bunch of good stuff coming up here on the show. We must begin with the wonderful, wonderful game that occurred last night between the Seahawks and the Bears. What's the opposite of a classic? Because that's what that was. Seahawks 6, Bears 3. My buddies, not my buddies, but the folks that I know over at MGM told me 33-1 on no touchdown score. I'm sure you could have gotten higher elsewhere. 33-1 doesn't sound nearly as juicy as it ought to be. But 6-3 Seahawks, implications abound. Let's start with the obvious one, the more personal one here on a numbers game. Our buddy Jake Bensequin, his survivor entry goes by the wayside. Goes by the wayside with the loss. He, remember now, there's nothing to be ashamed of here. He only had Pittsburgh and Chicago available to him in the Christmas quirk, the Christmas standalone weekend of Survivor. He made the correct play, but taking the more plus EV play on the Bears. Steelers got eliminated, obviously, 2 days ago against the Chiefs. Bears had every opportunity in the world to win this game yesterday, and they couldn't. Do you know why? Because they're the Chicago Bears. All in all, out of the 45 entries that entered the Christmas quote-unquote week, let's call it week 17A in Circus Survivor, 11 total entries eliminated, 6 on the Bears last night, 4 on the Steelers, 1 on the Texans. The implied value, the intrinsic value of each remaining entry of the 34 with 2 weeks now left in the season, 17B and 18, if you will, 17B being this weekend, $430,176. $430,176. So in the Christmas week itself, one more than the minimum got eliminated. So it's amazing. With this looming in the end, it was chockety chock chock is what ends up happening. We're not going to go through this game last night, which was, by the way, for poor Jake was not poor Jake, still the co-founder of ProfitX and things are looking good. He won the biggest bet of his life betting on the Seattle money line yesterday. And it's still the saddest person because it still sucks to get knocked out of Survivor. But what a slow death that was with that ball game yesterday. My goodness. Absolutely a brutal experience watching 6-3. We'll just go. There's only one thing before the final sequence I want to talk about, which is late in the third quarter. Seattle 2nd-9 at the Chicago 42. 1:55 left in the third quarter. Geno to Pharaoh Brown. Tackled by Tremaine Edmonds. He fumbles. Kyler Gordon recovers, and initially, it's one of these scoop and scores. I don't know about you, but my head was kind of turned after the tackle. Next thing I know, Gordon is sort of jogging downfield. He sort of slows down at one point and then gets it in his head correctly. He's like, you know, maybe I just ought to take across the goal line just in case here. He does. The officials, and this is also adding to the cruelty of the loss on the Bears yesterday, the officials come out and say the ruling on the field is a touchdown. So, of course, our brains leave our heads. We're just so pumped about this. I'm like, I completely didn't even, I thought the whistle had blown, But apparently, based on what the refs were saying, what the referee said, no, it hadn't. That's a touchdown. And then, of course, they review it, and they're like, oh, he was down by contact. Kyler Gordon was when he got the ball. So I was behind that as well. So anyway, much ado about nothing. I mean, it is a turnover, but in this game, it was much ado about nothing because the Bears could never do anything with anything. So that was the one sort of moment of hope for folks who need the Bears to win. Bears end up covering this, by the way, of course, as a closing 4.5-point dogs in this. But for those who needed Chicago to win it outright, that was the sort of one moment of hope. Let's go to the final sequence, because this is really all that one should take away from this, besides playoff implications, which we'll get to momentarily. But Chicago starts their final drive, what ended up being their final drive, because, again, they're the Bears, at their own 11 with 5:12 left in the game. Chicago starts the drive at their own 11 with 5:12 left in the game. They're down, of course, 6-3, because that was the score for really most of the second half. The entire second half. No one scored in the second half. So they start at their own 11 with 5:12 left. We look up. I was watching the game with Jake here at Circa yesterday. You look up at the screen for the in-game price. Keep in mind the Bears are down 3 and they have the ball, albeit at their own 11. The money line on the Seahawks at that moment is minus 500. It's ridiculous. Down 3, the Bears are staring down the barrel of a minus 500. They took a little Bears money, you could see on the end game, because it got down to minus 400 on the Seahawks, but you get the idea. And I said to Jake at this point, I'm like, you know what the problem here is? Do you think the Bears believe they can win this football game? And he says, yeah, no, I don't. I don't either. When you watch tennis, that's part of the ability to succeed in accomplishing an upset. You have to have belief. I don't think the Bears had belief. So they started their own 11 with 5:12 left. They get it to first and 10 at their own 30 with 4:17 left. Now let's walk through that. First and 10 at their own 30 with 4:17 left. Because here's the part that might have you know, sort of got lost. They end up with fourth and inches, and it's a false start by right guard Jake Kern. This is fourth and inches at their own 39 and a half, if you will. So they have a false start, fourth and 5 at their own 35. Interim head coach Thomas Brown says, let's punt it. They go into punt formation with 2:14 left. So keep in mind, the first down was with 4:17 left. The fourth down occurs with 2:14 left, where he goes into punt formation, uses the first of his precious timeouts, changes his mind, and decides to go for it. Because, of course, you go for it. Of course you do. There's 2:14 left. So just review that for a second. Three downs occurred where they wasted 2 minutes and 3 seconds, only could gain 5 yards in the process, and wasted a timeout. So they go for it. Caleb, flush to his right, desperate, heaves it, caught by DJ Moore, first down. By the way, not only did the previous three plays take 2 minutes and 4 seconds off the clock, but between the third and fourth down play, a full 40 seconds went off the clock. All right, then a sack, because that's what Caleb does. Then a one-yard gain. It's third and 14 at their own 45 with 1:15 left. Third and 14 now at their own 45 with 1:15 left. Remember, field goal to tie, touchdown to win. They still have 2 timeouts at this point. Caleb to Adunze for 15. So there's like 110-ish, 107-ish, 10, you know, somewhere in that pocket right in the game. 108, let's call it exactly. They don't use their timeout. They have 2 left. They don't run their next play till 37 seconds are left in the game. Incomplete. And with the clock stopped at 31 seconds, then Thomas Brown and the Bears decide, let's use our second timeout because, you know, clock stop. We want to avoid delay of game penalty. Let's use our second timeout. Just like, you can't make this up, especially after the Thursday Thanksgiving debacle, of course, against the Detroit Lions, which cost Matt Eberflus his job, the timeout that never was against the Lions. So they're doing this again. This might even be worse because they had that experience before. So then after that, by the way, you know the rest. Incomplete. Fourth and 10 at the Seattle 40. They eschew the 58-yard field goal try for Cairo Santos, who's never kicked one successfully from that far. They go for it. Caleb picked by Requel. And ball game, Seattle 6, Chicago 3. It's the lowest scoring game of the 2024 NFL season. It was the Bears' 10th straight loss. After the game, they asked Thomas Moore about the sequence and the just whole just shenanigans of wasting time and not calling a timeout, about him changing his mind from punting to going for it. He said, quote, there wasn't confusion at all. I just changed my mind. I think being able to use Torrey Taylor as a weapon, that's their punter, We still had, I think, 2:16 on the clock, still had all three timeouts plus the two-minute warning. Well, you didn't have the three timeouts after you called the timeout, but okay, so far, so good. So the way our defense had been playing all day, possibly having the chance to go flip the field and force a three and out, get a shorter field, they have to make a last game-ending drive. That was my thought process. Okay, you lost me there. I don't know what that meant. I don't know what that word salad meant right there. And then over the course of that, changed my mind and said, let's go for it now. Brown, by the way, responded to a follow-up question about why he changed his mind by saying, quote, I just wanted to be more aggressive. That sequence was not a good career pusher forwarder, if you know what I mean, for Thomas Moore. Caleb Williams, by the way, in this game, did not complete a pass beyond 6 yards downfield to the final drive of regulation in the Bears' loss. Look at those stats. Under 10 air yards, 15 of 17. Over 10 air yards, 1 of 9 for 15 yards. And it was that completion that on fourth down, on fourth and long, that extended the drive. My goodness. It's really tough with the Bears, by the way, to determine where does the offensive line woes begin and end and where does the Caleb part start and end. But Caleb is absolutely not clean of being without responsibility here because, and I think Kirk Herbstreit said it best at one point in the broadcast, he doesn't believe Caleb sees things pre-snap. And I think that's part of it too. Caleb doesn't see pre-snap. And so he ends up going with plays that are low percentage plays before the play even begins and then requires his athleticism and a whirling dervish and heaving a ball and, you know, just relying on his arm strength to get it to where it goes. It's supposed to go. But that's the thing. It's like you'll make those plays every once in a while. It'll be great to watch. But generally speaking, they're low percentage plays. Caleb has been sacked 5+ times. This is from StatMuse. Has been sacked 5+ times in 6 games this season. Only David Carr, who holds the record for the most sacks in any given season in the NFL, which, by the way, Caleb is approaching. Might not get there, but Caleb is approaching. Only David Carr recorded more such games. That's 5+ times of getting sacked. Only David Carr has more of those in one season. My goodness. And that, of course, was his rookie season. We'll get back to Seahawks playoff scenarios. What did that mean last night? Not much, by the way, but we'll get to what their scenario is. And I have a college football play in addition to my NFL ones next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In sports betting and trading, understanding probability is the ultimate game changer. Unlock the secrets of high probability trading with Todd Bubba Horwitz, former floor trader, seasoned sports bettor with over 45 years of experience. Good guy. Visit BubbaTrading.com/VSiN today. Use promo code VSiN500 to save $500. See what we did there? VSiN500, $500. Don't miss your chance to sharpen your strategy, gain the edge in your trading game. That's BubbaTrading.com/VSiN. Promo code VSiN500. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback from everybody. Chris Hauser said, oh, yeah, at Circa, 120-1 for no touchdowns yesterday. 120-1. That sounds more like it. I thought that price they told me at MGM was ridiculous. 120-1 cash is for anybody. By the way, I'm not. Did anybody actually bet it, though, is the question. That would be the question I would have. Kevin Ryan, Gil, look at the positive side. You won't. This is great. You won't have to pay $750 for a suit for being a partial survivor winner. You got that going for you. That's what Fezzik did. According to Fezzik last year, he was duped into having to buy the jacket. This is from. And Kevin Ryan also adds, Gil, easy to make the argument that Caleb is the fifth best quarterback picked in this year's draft now with Penix in the mix. Well, I don't know if you can say he's fifth because we haven't seen J.J. McCarthy, right? And then we haven't seen enough of Penix to make that. So what does that make? What does that put Caleb at? 1, 2, 3, 4th at this point or 3rd? I can't even think of it. Listen, those who said that if they redrafted, the Bears would still draft Caleb over Jaden Daniels, which was what they said on the Rich Eisen show, I have no idea what you're talking about. No idea what you're talking about. But go ahead, because then Washington gets Jaden to get it too. It's hard to argue that Bo Nix had the second best season of everybody, right? That's for sure. And then obviously New England's happy with Drake May. Caleb's, in terms of performance, Caleb is 4th for sure. Because I don't think you can really rate J.J. McCarthy or Michael Penix at this point. If you were to ask the question, if you start a franchise again from scratch, where would you draft him? Would you draft him 4th? Maybe you don't. Maybe you draft him higher than that still. But it can't be higher than second. You can't do it again first over Jaden. My God, what are we talking about here? James Sott. All I could hear when watching Caleb Williams was Merrill Hodges' voice.
He is not special. He is not special. There's nothing special about him.
It's Merrill Hodge on a numbers game right before the Super Bowl this past year when we're talking about the NFL draft. Again, Caleb has no help with the offensive line. And by the way, do Keenan Allen and DJ Moore get open at all? At all. So that's been an interesting sort of development with the Bears this season as well. And then, you know, again, don't worry about Jake. He's good. Don't worry about me. We're good. He played it as optimally as he could. When the final buzzer sounds, right, when he throws the pick and the game is over, you do have that moment where you're like, well, just me and him watching. I really can't say anything. You don't really know what to say about anything. You're sort of like, I'm just remain silent till this goes. So it's like 2 minutes of awkwardness, and 2 minutes is like an eternity. And finally, in your head, you're like, what do I say? Well, how about that Beyonce? Like, you have no idea what to say to a guy, because as well as he played it, it still sucks. Speaking of the crew, who was kind enough to put on that Merrill Hodge clip right there, crew presents given out today. Everybody gets $100. Future. Everybody must bet $100 on a future. Future of your choice could be in any sport. Has to be a futures play. Can't be just on a game. A futures play, anything in the year 2025 or at the end of 2024, you can place it, whatever. And then we'll track them throughout the year. So thanks to the crew again, who we will mention by name again towards the end of the show, who make all of this possible here. As far as the Seahawks, because there's a lot of people out here who have the Seahawks, probably a make-miss playoffs, maybe to win the division, whatever it is that you have on the Seattle Seahawks, because in real life, obviously the Bears lose their 10th in a row from 4-2 to 4-12. But as far as the Seahawks are concerned, you're like, okay, so what did that win over the Bears do for their, you know, for their playoff scenarios? The answer is not much. Not much. It raised their playoff possibility a grand total of 2%. Here's why. Now, first of all, it clinched a winning season for Mike McDonald in his first season as head coach of the Seahawks. So good on him for that. But their only path to the postseason is winning the NFC West. They cannot be a wild card, as we knew, going into last night's game. The most direct path, of course, is a loss Sunday by the Rams against the Cardinals and a Seahawks win then over the Rams the following week. That's the most direct route for the Seattle Seahawks. Everything else is muddled. And by muddled, I mean, first of all, loss last night wouldn't have changed that, really, to be honest with you. They're looking for a Rams loss this week, and then they can beat the Rams next week. That's the cleanest way to get in there. Now, here's the problem, though. What that win did last night is they can still get in the playoffs if the Rams beat the Cardinals on Sunday. The problem is that they would still need to beat the Rams next week, and then they would end up tied with the Rams, and then you would go to a tiebreaker in that scenario. So again, if the Rams win this Sunday, the Seahawks still have a chance. They would have to beat the Rams, but then they would have to go to the fifth tiebreaker, because the first four, they're all tied on. Head-to-head would be 1-1. Best one-loss tie percentage in games played within division, they'd be tied on. Best one-loss tie percentage in common games, they'd be tied on. So you'd have to go to best one-loss tied percentage in games played within the conference. That's also a tie. You'd have to go to fifth tiebreaker. Strength of victory in all games. Strength of victory in all games. So, this is, man. So, if the Rams win on Sunday against the Cardinals, and then the Seahawks beat the Rams next week, the Seahawks aren't definitely in. Seahawks are only clinched the cleanest again as the Rams lose this weekend, and then they beat the Seahawks. But the Rams win this weekend, and the Seahawks win and beat the Rams next week. The Seahawks still need help, and that help is, follow me here, if the Rams win this weekend and they get a grand total, a combined 3.5 wins, because ties matter here, if they get a grand total of 3.5 wins between the Vikings, Bills, Niners, Commanders, Bengals, and Browns, if that combination of teams gets them 3.5 wins with a Rams victory this weekend against the Cardinals, Rams clinch, game next week means nothing. Or if the Rams win, they don't get the 3.5 wins, and then the Seahawks beat the Rams next week, those 3.5 wins can still occur, or the aggregate 3.5 can still occur next week. So anyway, that's a tough thing to try to convey on the radio, I understand. But just know that the cleanest way for Seattle is Rams lose this weekend, Seattle wins next weekend. Everything else is muddled. And the Rams, and you put it in the wash, that win last night brought the Rams' playoff possibilities up from 14% to 16%. It was a 2% advancement. That's it. So if you have a Seattle make or Seattle win the division, know that your playoff chances just advanced incrementally with that win last night. So you're big Cardinals fans is what I'm saying this weekend. Is basically the wash. Five college football bowl games today. By the way, while the NFL was a 6-3 finish yesterday, they scored a million points, I think, combined in those three college football games yesterday. Today we have five of them. Five of them, including a 17-point spread now between Wazoo and Syracuse in the Holiday Bowl. Because, again, the Cougars don't have their head coach. They don't have their OC. They don't have their defensive coordinator. They don't have their quarterback's coach. They don't have their running back's coach. Good God. Did I mention their quarterback as well? In the transfer portal, John Mateer? Everybody's out. So it's 17.5 now. It's gone through the 17. This has gone from 7 to 17.5, something like that. Good God. So the question is, do you still want to bet Syracuse laying the points? I don't know how you make a case for Washington even 17.5, but I'm staying away from this because here, you'll forgive me. Again, I wasn't tracking the Holiday Bowl or any of these bowl lines today. I had some other stuff going on in my life, so I'm behind on most of this, so I don't have a play on that. There's three games, so that's the second to last game chronologically today, the Holiday Bowl. There's also a few other bowls today, but the one that I did end up making a play, and I realize here, listen, Fezzik is going to be on Twitter. He could kill me on Twitter for this because this is the worst thing you possibly do, but I was not aware of, I was not tracking these bowl lines, but the Armed Forces Bowl today, and I realize I'm behind on this, I still think the wrong team is favored. I realize Navy was catching like 7 points at some point in this. Again, forgive me that I missed it. They're a 2-point dog now against Oklahoma, but I still think they're the right team. And again, you have a Service Academy team in a bowl. You won't go wrong long-term betting Service Academy teams in a bowl game. And if you watch that Army-Navy game, Blake Horvath really outplayed Bryson Daly, who was, finished sixth in the Heisman vote, I believe it was. Blake Horvath, 170 yards passing, 204 yards passing, 204 yards passing, four touchdowns for the season. 1,261 yards passing for Blake Horvath. That's the first Navy quarterback to throw over for 1,000 yards in 5 years. 13 touchdowns. He's rushed for over 1,000 yards, 15 more touchdowns. And then on the Oklahoma side, it's Michael Hawkins Jr., their freshman quarterback who did play a few games this year, played credibly, I suppose. He's under center. You put all that, and by the way, defense, they've got some a rash of opt-outs as well, and transfer portal departures for the Sooners on offense, really, primarily. I don't know, besides Hawkins, what a smattering it's going to be. Give me Navy today, despite the fact that I am getting the worst of it. Again, you'll forgive me for not talking about this game sooner, but I'm on Navy today. Also sprinkled some on the money line. Paul Carr on the other side. Let's talk some Premier League soccer. He's got a 3-pack. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to become a sharper better this holiday season? VSiN has the ultimate gift for you or the sports better in your life. Right now, take advantage of our holiday special. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we offer through May 1st for just $79. Sign up now. Get instant access to our daily best bets to help you cash more tickets, exclusive betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access to VSiN's expert insights, plus all of our betting guides and expert picks for the college football playoffs, Super Bowl, and March Madness. Everything you need to win big this season. Make this holiday season unforgettable with the gift of smarter betting. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe now and unwrap your winning edge today. Skill Alexander live from Circa. We get tweets at Beating the Book here on the Numbers Game. Always appreciate it. This is from B. Miller at B. Mills 2281 underscore B. The biggest issue with Caleb, he says, is a dysfunctional organization. He was drafted by the Bears, continued to draft quarterbacks, and then proceed to fire their head coach in the first season. Insanity, he says. They showed that graphic last night. That this is a known thing about the Bears, how they end up, they draft a quarterback. You go back to the Rex Grossman and Cade McNown and all these guys. They draft a quarterback, obviously Mitch Trubisky as well, and then they end up firing the coach, the incumbent coach, that after one season, and then the new coach comes in, And, you know, when you do that mix, not only are you doing a different, you know, largely oftentimes a different system, which messes up a young quarterback, but you have a guy and a head coach that didn't draft that guy, that didn't have a say in drafting that guy. So it's this incredible cycle of dysfunction. It's never one thing. So I agree with that. I agree with the fact that Caleb doesn't have a supporting cast as well, but part of it's Caleb, man. It's the Todd Wishnev sort of scouting report, which is, let me get this straight, Gilly, a quarterback at USC who made his best plays by just running around for 5-10 seconds, and then finally his five-star receivers in the Pac-12 would get open against four-star corners. Yeah, that was his scouting report. Mariners geek, did you hedge enough with your own entry to have some good vibes? Yes. I mean, that's the thing. Again, Jake did too. Jake, again, hit his biggest bet of his life, but it's the saddest, even though he won his biggest bet of his life, it's the saddest moment, so he'll always associate those two things together. And then Jason Stark, thank you for this, Jason. Also, Michael Montesano on that text. Jeff Benson over at Circa, who was kind enough to hook us up with the booth. Jeff says, eight bets were on no touchdown. Eight bets at Circa on the no touchdown. I don't know if they all got 120-1, but that was the best of it. And one of those bets was for exactly $176.19. That sounds like the old account clearer bet is what it is. But that's a nice one to hit at 120-1 if that's in fact what happened. So congratulations to all who did that. Lowest scoring game in the National Football League this season. Paul Carr made a great decision last night. He didn't watch any of it. Comes to us from Topeka, Kansas, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line to talk Premier League soccer. How you doing, man?
One of my better choices this year. I was at a Christmas party, didn't pay any attention. I checked the score alerts on my phone at the end of the night and thought something was broken and they didn't show up after the second half. But no, they just didn't show up at all.
You are a Dolphins fan.
Yeah.
You are mathematically alive, sir. You got to beat Cleveland this weekend. Six and a half point favorite, by the way, on the road. I get it. Yeah. It's Cleveland. It's DTR, but okay. At the Jets to close it out. You got to do that first, and then you need help. You need either the Broncos or Chargers to lose a couple in the process as well. Otherwise, yeah, the Dolphins are donezo. Are you even thinking about this? Have you already erased it from your mind? Is not a possibility?
Yeah, mostly erased it. I mean, but yeah, you should beat the Browns and Jets, and if you can't win those, you don't deserve to get in. But just the unlikelihood of all those other things going the right way, especially the Chiefs aren't likely going to play all their starters against the Broncos next week. Nor should they, given that they have everything wrapped up. So, yeah, I don't have any expectations of making the playoffs here, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's what I thought your answer would be. We have a listener question, as always. Tim Lawson from Better Life and Megapod historian Tim Lawson ask a question, because you have you've done this thing with Premier League bets where you have just absolutely keep going to the well, fading Man City. They're taking on Leicester City, and his question is, if the season continues like this, could it threaten Pep's job? And he's excited to see if you are, in fact, continuing the Man City fade train this week.
On the job front, they're not going to fire him. You can't fire a coach who has won, I forget how many trophies, and won four straight Premier League titles. I'd say there's a non-zero chance he just resigns and is like, all right, I'm done with this. Because he's talked openly about not being there too much longer. Like, I'd be surprised, even if things were going well, if he lasted much more than another year or so. So there's a chance, but also he just doesn't, it's not like there are not obvious strings for him to pull to make City better. There's a ton of injuries. There's aging. I mean, the moves would have been in the off season, and I would imagine they'll try to bring a guy or two in during this January transfer window and see if that can kind of add life to the team to at least get back in the top four in a Champions League spot for next year. But I'd be shocked if they fired him. Maybe he resigns. I doubt it, but maybe. But there's almost no chance they'll actually fire him.
Pep Guardiola is who we're talking about here. Does he give us an American football equivalent to him?
Yeah, I mean, he's done it everywhere. He's won tons of trophies with Barcelona, Bayern Munich, and Manchester City. So, I mean, Andy Reid didn't win in Philadelphia. I'm trying to think who's won like Super Bowl titles with a couple different teams. There's got to be somebody.
Yeah, it's not coming tough to me
off the top of my head.
If Larry Brown had won multiple titles in the NBA, it would be kind of him, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Something along those lines. He's been the best head coach in the world more or less for 15 years, and he's done it with a lot of different clubs and a lot of different environments. So, yeah, Yep. Phil Jackson, maybe NBA type. I mean, maybe that's a little extreme, but you know, he did it with the Bulls. He did it with the Lakers. So there's one possibility there.
He did it with Jordan. He did it with Kobe
right.
and Shaq.
Well, and that's one criticism you'll hear floated about Pep occasionally is, oh, well, he's just doing it with the best team in these leagues. Well, yes and no. You know, City was not this dominant before he got there. Barcelona was not maybe the best team we've ever seen before he got there. So, you know, there's a skill for a coach to take a good team and make them great. Would he do the same thing if you gave him, you know, the equivalent of the Browns or something? I don't know. It'd be great to see, but he's smart enough not to do that.
As to the other question, are you taking Leicester City and fading Man City?
I can't do it this week. This is the price, really. Leicester's plus 210 on the double chance against Manchester City. I don't like that. I mean, Everton was plus 235 midweek on the double chance, which I took, and that hit. And Everton's significantly better than Leicester, and I think that should more than make up for the fact that this game is at Leicester and the midweek game was at City. So plus 210 to me is just not good enough. And Leicester's, I mean, they're going to get relegated almost certainly. I may end up pulling the trigger on it, but it's not an official play today.
Okay. So this is the rare Premier League week where you don't have any plays tomorrow. It's usually Saturday plays, but we have one today, one Sunday, and one Monday, right?
Yeah. Schedule's all kind of wonky. They jam about four games into a 2-week schedule during the festive season, as they call it. So this is kind of the third game for most of these teams. So yeah, the schedule gets a little janky because they all played, a lot of them played yesterday on Boxing Day. The rest played today and then Sunday, Monday for most of the rest of them.
Boxing Day. Again, a belated happy Boxing Day for those who missed our wishes yesterday to you. Those in the Commonwealth nations. All right, today then, what is the play?
All right, Arsenal Ipswich Town today. I'm going over 1.5 goals in the first half at even money. Ipswich, again, they're in serious relegation jeopardy, but they tend to come out strong. 11 of their 16 goals have been first half this season. Also conceded the fourth most expected goals in the first half. They give up high quality shots. Arsenal scored more than half of their home games in the first half as well. Arsenal doesn't have Bukayo Saka, their best attacker, but I think they have enough decent depth, and that starts to show in this holiday period that they'll get a goal or two in the first half. Maybe Ipswich gets ones too. So over 1.5 goals in the first half today.
If Kelly were here, he would say nothing sounds more English than Ipswich Town.
Ipswich Town.
Arsenal, yep. Ipswich Town, over 1.5 goals in the first half at even money. Then we go to Sunday. What do you have? You do have a Leicester City, Man City play, but it's just not on the side.
Correct. I'm going over 3.5 at minus 105 in this one. Both are in the top 7 in total goals this season in their games. The underlying number is pretty close to that. You know, this just feels like a get-right game for City, a 3-1 type of win. And the other thing to keep in mind during this holiday period, again, this is the third game in 8-9 days for most of these teams. And historically, what you would expect to happen does happen in that the good, deeper teams tend to do better over the latter stretches of this period. So this is the third game, again, in just over a week. I think the City, their depth isn't great, but the talent's just there. So I think they'll rack up 2-3 goals. Leicester maybe get one or two on the counter or something like that. I think we're going to have a lot of scoring either way. So over 3.5 here.
All right, and you balance that out with an under on Monday.
Manchester United, Newcastle, under 2.5 plus 135. This is about a couple things, mostly on the Man United side. Their new manager, Ruben Amorim, has really kind of tightened up the defense, which has also gotten healthy, just given up a lot less opportunities over the past few games. And United also will not have Bruno Fernandes, their best attacker, suspended for red cards, or a red card, two yellows in their last game, so he won't be there. So I think United's going to try and keep this tight, scratch out a draw, something like that. Under 2.5, getting plus 135 here is what I like.
Okay, Arsenal, Ipswich Town, over 1.5 goals in the first half today. That's at even money. Then on Sunday, the Leicester City, Man City, over 3.5. And then on Monday, Man U and Newcastle, Paul's going under 2.5 goals. I know it's a couple days early, according to your constitution, to say Happy New Year, but Happy New Year nonetheless, Paul, and happy holidays.
I'll take it. Thank you. Happy Hanukkah and everything else to you.
Thank you, sir. Paul Carr, at Paul Carr, C-A-R-R, on the old Twitter machine. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke. All his bets next on a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Did you know you can take VSiN with you wherever you go? With the VSiN Watch app, it's never been easier to stay connected to the action, whether you're on the phone, tablet, or even your smart TV. And here's the best part. It's absolutely free for a limited time with the VSiN Watch app. You get 24/7 live access to our audio and video streams, replays. This is my favorite part of this. Replays of your favorite VSiN shows so you never miss a beat. You heard about a segment, you missed the segment, you can find it easily. And I'm talking about months ago. The ability to stream directly to your smart TV for the big screen experience, quick access to clips by sport, tailored to your interest, and a search feature that lets you find exactly the insights you're looking for VSiN experts. Don't miss out. Get the VSiN Watch app and stay in the game wherever you are. And let me tell you, one of the great things you can do, of course, is watch and listen live, and specifically with watching live. Right now, if you're watching live, you're about to be regaled and behold the great tracksuit appearance of the great Jason Weingart from under a cloud of smoke in Southern California. He joins us now courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. For the record, it's not a tracksuit day. It's just a Patagonia.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, we took you off camera. What a buzzkill that was right there. Oh, I'm sorry. Jason Weingarten, maybe we'll work the camera out. Jason, what I like about your appearance here this morning is you and I were texting yesterday, and you've got some complaints. You got some grievances you want to air. Where would you like to start?
The first thing I mentioned to you was the news that Tom Brady is an AP voter for NFL awards while simultaneously being an owner for the Raiders. It seems like that's just one of those things that shouldn't happen. And people are trying to justify, well, it's Tom Brady. If anybody knows who to vote for, it's Tom Brady. But that just seems, you know, another thing that we need to kind of, you know, look at for MVP voting that shouldn't be, and for all award voting, actually. I don't think any owner should be allowed to vote for an award tied to financial incentive for players. That's just a massive conflict of interest.
Absolutely is, and you shouldn't even have to, like, say it out loud, right? It's so obvious. And, you know, you think about it this year, you know, maybe it doesn't come into play this year, but, I mean, Brock Bowers, some people think he should be Rookie of the Year. Maybe if it was a year where Jaden Daniels wasn't such the clear Rookie of the Year, that could have come into play, right? You could have had a Raiders owner voting on one of his players in what could have been a closer vote. So, I mean, you don't need to look further than that as a possible conflict of interest. And then maybe in future years, right? Maybe next year, I don't know who, but maybe somebody on the Raiders ends up being a much more viable candidate in any one of these awards markets. You're absolutely right. It should not be allowed.
And then on top of that, it got me thinking. I saw another tweet from I think it was one of the Indianapolis beat writers, and they were pointing out that in Indianapolis, they don't even have a vote at all. The way the AP voting is structured, I guess, you know, what cities are represented and what aren't, which aren't. I know Detroit, the Lions beat writers don't have a vote, which is kind of weird, especially when you get like a situation where Matt Campbell is up for coach of the year and his own beat writers don't even get to vote on that. Indianapolis, like I mentioned, they were complaining, their beat writers were complaining that they don't have a vote. I know there's at least one other situation I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's just weird. Like I said this jokingly, but the NFL really needs to invest in awards reform. Like there's so many sort of vague criterias and made up stuff. Like I mentioned to you yesterday, the MVP. I think Lamar Jackson should win the MVP. I also think Lamar Jackson should win the Offensive Player of the Year. I don't see any situation where he's the MVP, but he's not the best Offensive Player of the Year, other than if you're telling me, oh, the Offensive Player of the Year is a consolation prize for the best non-quarterback offensive player. Except it doesn't say that anywhere in the criteria. You've just become an activist in this interpretation and have decided that this is what you think. It's not what it says. It's what you think. So, again, the Offensive Player of the Year splitting from the MVP. The last time we had a quarterback win both was Patrick Mahomes in 2018. Since then, I guess the voters have decided that it's a consolation prize, but this is all just convoluted and it should be sort of fixed because people are just kind of making stuff up and I don't like it.
It's you make a lot of interesting points. Let me go back to the one that I'm not sure I agree with, which is about, you were saying, you know, Indianapolis doesn't have a vote, or, you know, these different cities don't have representation in the votes. I don't know that I care about that. Like, I kind of like it how it is, where guys who cover the sport in general, without any sort of regional basis, you know, the Aaron Schatz of the world, the Mike Sandos of the world, our own Adam Schein. I don't mind that that's where the votes are for people that don't have an affiliation with a certain city. But obviously with Brady being a part owner, a minority owner of the Raiders, that's where I completely agree with you. Like that you cannot have. As to the, you know, MVP slash offensive player of the year, the way you say it is very logical. You're right. Without a defined sort of set of criteria, it does allow for individual interpretation. By the way, some people may like that people get to interpret it however they want, right? MVP, I always say, is even though I think Lamar Jackson should be MVP, I do concede that if you took most valuable player literally as a meaning of if you remove them from the team, you know, what's the difference between having this person on the team versus not having it? I always say, I go, yeah, if you take Josh Allen off the Bills, they probably win 3 games, right? So, I mean, I appreciate the fact that someone might interpret it that way, whereas I interpret it with these other set of criteria, right? But the NFL is largely gutless on this stuff. When it comes to the Tom Brady matter, they have actually, the only statement they've made is the NFL does not weigh in on such things, right? Like it's just a completely gutless remark that doesn't even address the point. The one time that they have chimed in, and Aaron Schatz let us know this in advance, was on comeback player of the year. I think they were so embarrassed that DeMar Hamlin didn't win it that they felt the need to chime in on that. And they did give a set of criteria as to what comeback player of the year, which really by their definition now eliminates Sam Darnold. And I'll take it one step further, Jason. I'm not sure that the voters are even going to pay attention to their new set of criteria. I don't know.
Don't forget that at the end of the day, this is an award show. This is part of a show that they put on the week of the Super Bowl, and voting for comeback player of the year to give the award to Joe Flacco or Geno Smith for no longer being a loser.
Right.
Like, these guys aren't going to show up to an award show to go up on stage and get an award and have the entire NFL clap at them for no longer being a loser. Just not something that anybody wants to do.
You no longer suck. Mazel tov to you. Enjoy.
Here's your stupid trophy.
Yeah.
And Flacco didn't show up. Geno Smith didn't show up because these guys don't want to go through. This is embarrassing for them. You know, I don't even think they get any extra money for a comeback player of the year award. It's not like you get any endorsements out of it or anything. So, you know, and end of the day, you got to remember this. A lot of this is a show. And I think they're going to understand that this year. But you're right. It's absolutely embarrassing. And I think it's kind of become a joke. I did make a little bet last week on Lamar for offensive player of the year at 65-1. I bet him again this week at 50-1. Both of those were at FanDuel. Not saying I think he's going to win. I'm just saying, you know, historically the quarterbacks used to win both, and all of a sudden the criteria changed. And I just don't understand how you can say, well, Lamar is the MVP, but he's not the offensive player of the year. But here we picked another guy for offensive player of the year. He's the best offensive player of the year, but he's not the MVP because he doesn't play quarterback. It just doesn't make any sense to me. So, I took a little shot on Lamar offensive player of the year. Let's see how the last couple weeks shake out.
Yeah, I mean, I've had that conversation with Aaron Schatz multiple times on this show over the years. And I love the way that you put it. It's kind of amusing, but it's also true, which is, you know, the way that Aaron views it, he's just one voter. He's just one guy. But the way he views it, again, he goes through his analytics, quarterback by definition, that you cannot be more valuable than a quarterback. Like he has set that in stone based on, you know, you'd have to be you'd have to be so out of control outlying to be more valuable than what a quarterback brings to a team. And so therefore, he treats offensive player of the year as a repository, as a place to store anyone who is not a quarterback. And you're right. The term you use, Jason, is then you're just an activist. I love that you say that.
If going by Schatz's definition, it doesn't say any of that anywhere in the voting. He made that all up, which, you know, is his right, I suppose. But that's his own interpretation, which is absolutely incorrect.
Yeah.
Not to, you know, throw him under the bus or anything, but he's just making up that criteria for himself and fitting it out for other people. That's why I keep saying there needs to be voting reform, because, you know, he thinks one thing, I think another. I'm probably right. But it just doesn't make any sense to me. And remember, the end of the day, it's not about me and the betting or us and what we make, but these are financial awards. You know, these get people lots of money. Players get, football cards, endorsements on these awards, or they don't get them. You get a lot of changes your career. So I think there needs to be a better better criteria for all these awards.
We're gonna have you and Shots fight it out, a Hanukkah showdown. That's what we're gonna have.
Do it. I'll be here.
All right, Jason. Thank you. Appreciate it, man. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I'll talk to you later.
Jason Weingarten, everybody, from Other Cloud of Smoke, at Spreadopedia, by the way. We'll come back. Chris Velika joins us, the Bear, on A Numbers Game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.